Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 34. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, Ken Jack. We have an interesting show for you this week. We got a different way to review a couple movies. We're going to be reviewing Pacific Rim Uprising, chatting about Death of Stalin really quickly, and then playing a new game. The Courtroom of... I already forgot what we called it. The Courtroom of Trill?
Yeah, just yes. Court of Trill. Let's call it Court of Trill. Guys, I got to say, I've had a bad week. I'm sorry. I have not seen any of the movies for this week. I just haven't had time. My job has been pretty rough. Been doing a lot of work. And you know what? People are doing work on my house. So you know where I'm doing this podcast from? The back of a Toyota. That's right, folks. I'm in the back of my Toyota. I got my power plugged into the power back here, probably draining all my batteries. I think the temperature in here is approaching 87, 88 degrees. So I'm sauna-ing myself. So, you know, let's just see what happens. Let's have a little fun with this episode.
Yeah,
look,
it's going to be fun.
I've had a bad week, so I'm going to get on the podcast and get all the anger and aggression out.
Question for you, Trill. Is this the first time you're doing it in the back of Toyota?
Yeah, actually. Ken Jack, if what you're saying is that if I've had sex in the back of a Toyota, I have not had sex in this car. You get to a certain age, Ken Jack, maybe you'll understand this. You start having sex in an actual bed.
What's a bed?
It's the thing your parents sleep on.
Oh, I don't know. I usually sleep on the couch because my wife's boyfriend's been more over more often than not.
Fucking Corey, man.
Okay. So, yeah, as Trill said, he didn't see some of the movies, so we're going to help him out. We're going to...
All of the movies.
In the Court of Trill. Yeah, all of them. In the Court of Trill. Ken Jack and I are going to both have a different stance on Sherlock Gnomes and Game Over, man. We're going to try to either convince Trill to see the movie or not see the movie. And then we're going to have movie battles. Movie battles 4. Got a little weird for this one. But first, some news. How about these three movies? Big reviews. Ready Player One, 83% are on Tomatoes. Certified Fresh. Blockers. Ooh. Also, Cock Blockers, but they're only calling it Blockers. 88%.
That's how you pronounce it.
Caw-caw
blockers. Every time on the podcast, we say it's caw-caw blockers.
Yep. Save it from being inappropriate. And then A Quiet Place, 100% after like 40 reviews. And they're already putting it in their ads. The movie's been out for 2 weeks, but their commercials already are touting their 100%. So big openings. Yeah, bold. We're reviewing Ready Player One next week. We're going to see it either tomorrow or next Monday. I'm not quite sure, but we're going to see Ready Player One this weekend. Very excited for that, but I think the one out of the three that's most surprising is probably Blockers. 88%. People are saying this is pretty great. Yep. There you go.
Sorry, you got to say it like that.
But yeah, people are saying it's pretty great. That's surprising to me.
Yeah. You know what? I'm happy for John Cena. Remember we were talking about The Daddy's Home 2? One of the takeaways is that we I don't know if we love John Cena in that role, but we love John Cena's cinematic presence. John Cena and Ike Barinholtz apparently are a formidable duo, and I'm really excited about that. I thought this movie was going to suck, guys. I would have bet a lot of money on this movie getting under 50% Rotten Tomatoes, and I would have bet a moderate amount of money on like a 30 or 20% rating.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Even after the first trailer that we had seen in theaters, Jeff, I was immediately out. I was like, this just looks so shitty. Looks so bad. But I love Cena, like you were saying. So if it's good, I'm happy. I want to see more wrestlers get into cinema. We got Batista, The Rock, John Cena, and end of list. Everyone else that's been in movies from wrestling's been bad.
Two things that Kenjack always touts. That's random actors he wants to have more roles and more wrestlers in movies. So dude, you're a man of the actors and actresses.
I want to be your agent, Daniel Bryan.
Are you surprised by Quiet Place?
I mean, it looked good to me.
Yeah, it looked good. Yeah. It's 100%. I know that'll come down.
I'm almost not surprised, though, because when you think about it, like, I think Krasinski, though granted he has been in some bad movies, but Emily Blunt, I feel like they're established enough where they're not going to make garbage movies, right? Like, doesn't that kind of make sense? Like, they're not going to put out trash. So it kind of makes sense that it is good. I'm happy it's good. We just named two things that, well, at least Ken, Jack, and I, because true, I think you're a little more open to things than we are. We're kind of curmudgeons about a few movie genres, but I want more comedies that work and I enjoy, and I want more horror movies that work and I enjoy. And I think horror movies have been much better than comedies in the last few years. So good on both. Happy about both. And very excited for Ready Player One. Very excited for that, like, nostalgia explosion.
Yeah, I like Quiet Place, looking up on it now, directed by John Krasinski and written by John Krasinski. And I like that whole director, writer, and actor. So I feel like you get the passion. Somebody feels really strong about a movie, and that's like their passion project. It's probably going to be original and good. Maybe not. But for the sake of this podcast and for the sake of The Quiet Place, that's how we're going to approach this.
Yeah, exactly. Smart. So
Ready Player One.
There are Transformers in this movie. Don't forget. So Ready Player One, we're going to be reviewing that next week. We'll probably remind you at least four or five times on this podcast. And also next week, I think we're going to do our baseball draft. Like we did for basketball, we picked our actor, actress, or our character basketball team. I think we're going to have to do it for baseball. Got to figure out the logistics, but I'm thinking that's what we're going to do. So that and Ready Player One next week. Next up, Dr. Doolittle. No, not the Eddie Murphy one. The Robert Downey Jr. one. The Voyage of Dr. Doolittle. Huge voice cast. Robert Downey Jr. obviously playing Dr. Doolittle. Then you have Emma Thompson playing a parrot. Rami Malek playing a gorilla. Octavia Spencer playing a duck. Ralph Fiennes playing a tiger. Kumail Namjani playing an ostrich. Selena Gomez playing a giraffe. Much different than the other actors and actors I just named. Hey, guess who it is? John Cena playing a polar bear. Francis De La Torre playing a... What the fuck is that? I don't even know what that animal is. Or is that a person? I don't know. Playing somebody. Marion Cotillard playing a fox. Tom Holland playing a dog. So Spider-Man, Iron Man back together. Carmen Jogo? What? I'm really bad with names right now. Playing a lioness. And Craig Robinson playing a mouse. I don't really know where to go with this. But that's a lot of different actors and actresses from all walks of life. From Selena Gomez to John Cena to Kumail to Emma Thompson and Octavia Spencer. And Marion Cotillard, because that's an Oscar winner. So really interesting. I guess I'm on board with this. It's Robert Downey Jr. So
I'm walking a tightrope right here, Jeff. I feel like this could be Paddington 2 all over again, where I trash the movie for months leading up to it and it ends up being good and delightful. I'm really hesitant to say anything bad about this movie because I'm not interested by it. But the cast is there, and we know about Dr. Doolittle. We know all about that dude. Can talk to animals. This is going to be a period piece, right? I'm guessing from like The Voyage and having a lot of different types of animals. Or is it set in like modern day? Do we know that?
That I actually don't know. I
feel like
that.
It'd be set in like 1880 or something like that. I feel like that would be a very Robert Downey Jr. Dr. Doolittle type movie to do. Don't you think so, Ken Jack?
Yeah.
See what I'm doing? I'm engaging you. We're developing rapport on the podcast.
Part of rapport is that I think this cast is cool, but does this need to be made? I think that the first one was enough. And the more I'm thinking about it, is there any other Robert Downey Jr. role since Iron Man that wasn't related to Marvel that have been good?
Dude, did suck. That's the only one I can think of. Tropic Thunder was good.
Tropic Thunder, the soloist, was okay. He was in Chef for a bit. The Judge, I did not like The Judge. I'm trying to think of movies. Since 2008, like, dude, that's 10 years. He hasn't really made movies outside of Marvel that were really any good. So, wait, I mean, I don't know.
Chef?
For like a hot second. He was Marvin.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, wow. Wow, I always forget that he was in that movie. Good point. Wow. He was also, obviously, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and not a good movie.
He was nominated for a Globe for it, so I some people
can't. Yeah, that tells you everything you need to know.
Oh, okay. Mm. Look at this guy. Award basher. So that's Dr. Doolittle.
I'm not going to butter for this one. I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm not
It's coming out in 2019. It's a major wait and see right now. I mean, the voice cast was just announced. You might be dead by the 20-minute, 19-second mark if your car's really that hot. But
my car's hot right now, and I have to get an operation in April, like a minor operation. So here's two chances for me to die way before that movie comes out.
Falling apart at seams.
Just be alive for Infinity War. I feel like that's the goal.
What if I tell like the studio that they got to take my gallbladder out and I want an early screening of it? Like, I'm having outpatient surgery. Can I get an early screening of Infinity War so I won't shit through the entire movie? Because that's what's going to happen the first couple weeks after my gallbladder's removed. I'm pretty sure.
Joss Whedon just quote tweets you, "Hey, Trollballins, thanks for your question. No."
And that would be weird because he's not doing the movie.
I reply back. I'm like, why are you involved in this tweet?
Was it the Ross Brothers? Something?
Also, how's the Batgirl movie going, Joss?
Become a huge dick. Yeah, the Russo brothers, the Captain America guys. So that's Dr. Doolittle. Let's move on to something that makes me laugh. Speaking of laughter, Kendrick's New Mutants. The X-Men horror movie, it got delayed yet again. It was supposed to be next, like, late winter, the February-ish area of 2019. It's now going to be in November. Remember we joked, Trill said, they're going to have to add New Mutants, jokingly, and then they ended up happening. They're going to add New Mutants. Now, apparently, they're going to reshoot potentially more than half of the movie. This, I feel like, has fallen into Gambit territory of never coming out. Like, this movie, I feel like this is not going to come out at this point.
Oh, man. That's rough. Do we know why they're reshooting it? Did they test it? Were there any test screenings? Because we're bashing on Deadpool 2, but I heard Deadpool 2 got tested, and the testing went well. And the reason they did reshoots was, I think, Tessa Thompson's character, right?
Domino?
Yes.
Yeah, they wanted, she did so good, they wanted to add more of Domino into the movie. I don't want to bash the reshoot here, but they added a new mutant, and they went back and retested it, and the people said, "I need more fucking mutants here." You can't.
I don't
just
think it's
add
Tessa
one.
Thompson. Though,
it's not. It's Dazzy Bet. It's Dazzy Beats.
Oh,
you're in a hot car.
Oh, okay. Am I thinking of Valkyrie?
Yes. Yeah, you're thinking of Valkyrie.
Okay, still in the Marvelverse, technically.
Yeah.
Still, I'm sorry to be an ass because we didn't need to correct you, but you are. Right.
I mean, I think it's shot. I think it's important that when people do a good job, they be recognized. I'm just, the car's approaching 89 degrees right now, so I'm okay.
Need also tied in, Ken Jack, you can give your thoughts, but tied in with the new mutants being moved is they moved Dark Phoenix to next year, right around when Captain Marvel comes out. So, I mean, it's probably going to get destroyed at that point in the box office. So lots of X-Men delays. This is no Gambit, Ken Jack, but are you starting to dislike New Mutants as much as Gambit?
I don't think I ever liked New Mutants, but it's definitely not in Gambit hatred territory where Gambit's just like a dumbass character. I mean, the New Mutants might be cool. They might have cool powers, unlike that card-throwing asshole. So, I mean, they might be good. Just have to wait, I guess, fucking 2 years for it to come out, I guess.
Yeah, mon ami, I throw the green card at you.
Oh, where's Rogue? I am so hot for Rogue.
So New Mutants, will it come out? We're not sure, but we do know that it's tentatively going to be released in the fall of 2019, something like that.
God, dude,
yeah,
I feel bad for Maisie Williams.
Anything that's going to be coming out after The Lion King to me is like an eternity away at this point. Like, yeah. That's the longest out I can think of a movie, because even Avengers Infinity or Avengers 4 is going to come out before that. So yeah, that's just too far away. Here's a movie that will not be coming out. Independence Day 3. The director apparently says there's no plans for a third. Quickly, buttering, not buttering, or happy or not happy.
We're buttering a movie that doesn't exist. I'm buttering,
buttering
the fact
that you have no movie.
Yeah. I'm buttering the fact that there will not be a third Independence Day.
Yeah, same. Buttering it as well. I wish they didn't make the second one, to be honest.
Ruined
yeah, the
childhood.
Second one was it was a huge bummer. It was my second least favorite movie of 2016. I gave it a 4 out of 100. I thought it was just awful. Very happy that I'm making another one. But that's some new news from today.
I do
last
like
but
that,
not least.
Oh, that genre of movie news where they ask a director if a movie's coming out and they're like, there's no plans. And then that's news in and of itself. Like,
there's so many
like, hey,
news.
Marty Scorsese. What about Goodfellas 2? We got no plans for that one.
There are just so many random clickbait news things. Actually, let's do this. This is a new segment I'm making up. We'll see how long it lasts. Going to read some clickbait headlines. You got what Anthony Mackie's Falcon thinks of Thanos in Avengers Infinity War. Exclusive. Anthony Mackie opens up on Falcon's role in Avengers Infinity War. He apparently just says that Thanos is rad or something, or he's like a really cool bad guy. Which, again, that clickbait title makes
interview.
It sound like...
Anderson Cooper talks to Falcon about Thanos. Opens up. Gets real honest.
This is a good one. How Winter Soldier would react to meeting Rocket Raccoon. Sebastian Stan reveals how Bucky reacts to meeting Rocket Raccoon. Okay.
They're basically they're asking these actors to like create fanfics.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
They're like, what if Rocket Raccoon was
horny?
What if he had all the Chaos Emeralds and Thanos had all the Infinity Stones and Dr. Robotnik came down?
Their best one, Ken Jack and I read this last night while we were playing Fortnite. It was an Iron Man 2 and Agent Carter Easter egg has been found. And we're like, ooh, okay, cool, cool. And it was like the same robe that Tony Stark's dad wore in the show, like was in the movie for about 2 seconds.
From fucking Agent Carter. Like, who gives a shit, man? Fucking even watch Agent Carter.
But to your point, Trill, the most popular clickbait thing is when they'll say blank movie is going to happen or might happen. And all it is they ask the director, like, could this sequel happen? And they're like, yeah, anything's possible. And then I guess that's all they say. It's one little quote.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, I'll do it for money.
The movie clickbait Twitter is a really good one. It exposes all those articles before you open them up. Oh boy. All right. Last but not least, live action Netflix movie, Carmen Sandiego, played by Gina Rodriguez. Buttering or not buttering to that?
I'm kind of buttering.
I forgot about Carmen Sandiego. You're buttering?
I'm kind of buttering. Yeah, I'm kind of buttering just because it's Netflix. And we hold Netflix to such a lower standard here.
Okay, so I see that point in that I will butter it because it's Netflix and I give them like the benefit of the doubt just because it's free. It's like a free movie more or less. So I'm okay with that. But not buttering it because I don't really give a shit about Carmen Sandiego. I don't think I ever even played the game growing up too much. So I'd rather have the Math Blasters video game.
I'm starting to feel a little bit like I'm being pandered to as well with all these like super 90s projects. So that's kind of making me mad because I like it and I'm buttering, but I'm also mad that they figured me out as a consumer so fucking easily.
Ken Jack, your tweet about it yesterday led to some great old vintage PC game reminders, though, from Humongous Entertainment, Pajama Sam, Spy Fox, Putt Putt, Saves the Zoo, and then, of course, any backyard sports game. So that was something good that came out of this, I guess. Man, I had a little nostalgia.
I hate Putt Putt.
Dude, I loved Putt Putt. Captain admit no... it, I loved that as a kid.
Yeah, dude. You know, John Lasseter was in his fucking dorm room playing that when he was like 29. He was like, I'm going to do something with this shit. God. Talking cars. That's the joke. He made cars. Putt-putt's a car. That's the joke.
Also, we have to bleep out John Lasseter's name. So,
oh fuck, I forget, dude.
It's too many to keep track of.
Yeah,
that was a tough one. We'll recover from that one though. So that's been news. Fun
car's
little news
so
segment.
Hot.
We're going to have Trill go fan himself off, and then we'll be back to review Pacific Rim Uprising, Death of Stalin, and then The Court of Trill will be in session. Game Over Man and Sherlock Gnomes. We'll be right back.
In the arms of the angel, fly away from here.
Hi, I'm Jeff Lowe from the podcast Lights, Camera, Podcast. It's a movie podcast. And we have an Instagram page. At Lights, Camera, Pod is our handle. We really need more followers. We're doing pretty well, but for just one follow by you, the listener, we can improve our brand and continue to grow it and make us more attractive to sponsors so we can do more and have more fun, which in turn gives you a better podcast to listen to. Please, any generous follow by pausing the podcast right now and following us on Instagram at Lights Camera Pod would be absolutely outstanding. Thank you.
In the arms of the angel, may you find some comfort here.
Okay, we're back on Lights Camera Podcast. Time for some reviews. We'll mainly focus on Pacific Rim Uprising, and we'll talk about Death of Stalin a little bit. Why not? We really liked it. War ready.
War ready.
We used that song at the end of our podcast on Sunday, so that was cool. A little foreshadowing. Ken Jack, what did you give Pacific Rim Uprising?
I gave Pacific Rim Uprising. By the way, why is it not called Pacific Rim 2?
I don't know.
Random aside, but I gave Pacific Rim Uprising a 70 out of 100.
Pacific Rim Soldado.
Soldado. Day of the Soldado.
Wow. Okay. I did not realize that you were going to go to 70. That's unexpected.
Yeah. So, like, the movie was exactly what it was billed to be, and it was nothing more, really. It was just giant robots beating the shit out of sea monsters, and for that reason, it's okay to me. As long as you can have the suspension of disbelief, you'll enjoy it, I think. So, I did. I mean, I didn't think I was going in expecting plot and some giant resolution. I was like, no, I want to see CGI robots just fucking throwing hands with sea bitches.
Were the kaijus cool?
Yeah. They had a Voltron kaiju.
Yeah.
Kaijo. It's just some big frat bro rising up from the sea. Yo, what's up, Joe? You guys want a Fortnite later?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The kaiju were pretty cool. I gave it a 52 out of 100. Ooh. So I liked it almost 20 points less than you. I was not a fan. I thought the initial storyline of the movie was pretty cool. So we'll dip into spoilers, I guess, kind of in a minute, just because you never know. It knocked Black Panther off the perch, so some people are seeing it. In the beginning, Trill, this is for you.
Okay, thank you.
John Boyega, his character, mm-hmm. who is the son of Idris Elba's character, he wanted to live in the post-kaiju world because like, there's a part of the world that isn't civilization, really. It's just kind of like not like the rest of the world. No real government oversight, anything like that. They live kind of free, and there's huge kaiju skeleton at mansions.
North Dakota.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he trades, they trade things. Like he trades a car for sriracha, like a thing of sriracha. It was pretty funny in the beginning. And you had this rogue sense, and he meets the female character. I believe her name is Amara. And they have this they have this Jaeger that she built. And it's pretty cool in the beginning. Like it's a completely different storyline, but then it just shifts right when you meet Scott Eastwood's character. And this is, shout out to Scott Eastwood. This is not the Scott Eastwood hate hour, but his character I wasn't a big fan of. I thought he was a little rough. I thought the dialogue that he was given was horrible. The script did not service him at all. And that's when it starts to take a turn, because then it becomes a rock'em sock'em robot, kaiju fighting robot movie. And it loses the development that you kind of hoped it would have. The first movie I really liked. I think I gave it an 80 something. Guillermo del Toro did it. It had some development in it. It was really interesting for what it was. This one felt like too much of Transformers, really. Like I got too much of a Transformers. Oh, it's fighting time with, you know, crazy sequences and some slow-mo and big explosions and, you know, crazy fighting, which is fine. It was entertaining. It's a popcorn flick for sure. But with how it started out, that's, I guess, why I'm disappointed. Like, if it was just that from the beginning, if it was just craziness from the beginning, then, you know, it is what it is. But I didn't like being kind of teased with something that was intriguing to me, because I actually really like John Boyega in this movie. And I'm not just saying that because I like Star Wars, I like John Boyega. But I thought he was actually good in this. It was a good role for him. And it didn't service him very well. The story, unfortunately, made his character not that interesting. And actually, right here, we'll get into spoilers. So if you don't want to have anything spoiled from Pacific Rim Uprising / Pacific Rim 2, stop right here.
To avoid spoilers for Pacific Rim Uprising, skip ahead to 33:41.
All right, so spoilers. Basically, there is a rogue Jaeger that attacks this presentation of these new drone Jaegers from this company, this Asian company that is making these drone Jaegers that Charlie Day's character is helping out. And they try to figure out who was manning that Jaeger or whatever. And it turns out they finally take it down, Scott Eastwood and John Boyega's character, and there is a kaiju like brain inside of it. Long story short, Charlie Day's character, who connected with some of the kaiju or the precursors in the first one, is infected by them, and he is now like basically part of the kaiju, and he brings the kaiju back to Earth because he built the drones and infected the drones with the kaiju brains, and they attack everything, and they bring the kaiju back to Earth, and it's just a crazy fight at the end, and they smash the giant Voltron kaiju into Mount Fuji, and then the movie ends. And I mean, literally, it ends. They smash the Jaeger into the mountain and the volcano, which is, they're trying to erupt the volcano to take the world over, basically, with all the ash. And Charlie Day's character is leading that. And like, they're on the mountain, they're throwing snowballs at each other, Amara and John Boyega's character. And that's really it. The movie just stops. And then there's a post-credit scene where Charlie Day's like, "You think this is over? This is not over." He has this weird, like, orgasm scene with kaiju entity that he's married to in his apartment. His character is the worst part of this movie. It is fucking weird. It's unfortunate because I love Charlie
Day in the first one.
Yeah, but he was infected because he connected. If you remember the movie, with the kaiju. Yeah,
so
the precursors are in his head.
Okay, yeah. So he's linked
to
the
kaiju. Over his brain.
Yeah,
he gave like hive mind. Or part of the hive mind, anyway. That was funny. The orgasm scene is so funny.
Yeah. Oh man, that's weird. Because he teases that he has a wife.
I'm coming.
He teases he has a wife or girlfriend, and then it turns out it's this like kaiju or precursor brain or whatever it is. I'm sure I'm getting the technicalities wrong, but they throw you for a loop. They want you to think the CEO of this company is really the bad person, but she ends up not being. And then she helps man a drone at the end of the movie, and it just takes such a hard turn for the worse. And his character was easily the worst part of that movie, which is so unfortunate because I love Charlie Day. And he's great in Horrible Bosses. He's so funny. I mean, obviously, in It's Always Sunny, you've seen more It's Always Sunny than me, Kendrick, but he's such a great part of that show. They just, again, it's a disservice to the actor in this movie. Like, a terrible job. It's just fucking weird.
Yeah, the weird part about Charlie Day's casting in that is like he's always known as like the dumb, lovable character in every role he ever does, and then to have him play like a biological like genius, a scientist, and everything, it just didn't make sense to me. I did like his orgasm scene though when they're playing like "I Want to Know What Love Is." I thought that was kind of funny, if not a little heavy-handed. But I think my favorite parts of this movie are the three kaiju that went. There was like a two category three or two category fours and a category five, and then basically. Charlie Day sends out like these little ant workers and they just combine them like Voltron into one giant kaiju. And they just fucking level Tokyo. I thought that was pretty funny. Just so ridiculous, but so it was great. Scott Eastwood, I feel, was basically just doing his best impression of his dad. Like there was nothing else to his character whatsoever. He's like, I'm just going to do an impression of my dad. And also, I don't know if you had noticed this, Jeff, but John Boyega was very dedicated to the handsome bit, like continuously calling Scott Eastwood handsome. He said it like four times.
Was it John Boyega or was it the scriptwriters, Ken Jack?
Boyega was just obsessed. He had it written into all of his lines. I feel like there's a decent amount of improvisation in the lines, but at least especially for this character.
Are you basing that off of something?
It didn't sound scripted. Like it was just like so off the cuff sounding.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, got it. I know you have all that industry experience, so that makes sense.
I think like I have that. More industry experience than you. I was a grip on forget, so shut up, bitch.
Maybe it was improv, but maybe it wasn't, because the script was really weird. I mean, it was weird.
Bad. Yeah.
From what I'm hearing.
Shut up. You didn't watch, asshole.
I mean, I'm trying to think of what else we can really get into. Yeah, I did like how...
You know, we'll talk about
the movie theater experience?
No. What the Russian cadet listens to when they launch into space?
Oh, shit. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. We'll get to that in a second. That's right. That was the one thing I was disappointed Trill didn't see, because there's one part where, Trill, you would have texted us immediately when it happened. But there was this thing in the movie where they sometimes gave a shit about the civilians on the ground, and then sometimes they didn't. When the first Jaeger attacks, they don't give a shit. There's destroying the city, running into buildings, like picking cars up and all this stuff and throwing them. And in Tokyo, when there's this huge attack happening, it reminded me of Batman, Superman, and I guess Avengers to an extent, or Age of Ultron, or no, Civil War, excuse me. They have all these civilians running all over the place. And then all of a sudden, in a split second, they go, okay, it's time to attack. The civilians are all underground, like out of nowhere, as if the entire city of Tokyo just went underground in a split second. So, I mean, this movie really wants you to suspend disbelief for many things, which is fine. It's a monster robot movie, but I don't like you either got to fully commit or, you know, you got to scale back a bit. Like, don't make it so the civilians, they got to be safe. And then also be ridiculous and making you suspend disbelief. I don't like toying with both of them.
But before I forget, there's something I noticed in this movie. Did you see how the Chinese corporation at first was penned out to be the bad guys, and then at the end, China came in and saved the day? Do you think they did that so that this movie will sell more abroad, because the first Pacific Rim did really, really well in China?
That's actually what our friends in the Weekly Planet brought up. They jokingly asked that, because they mentioned that with the last one and then Transformers as well. Very similar styles to that. They both do very similar things. That is a pretty good point. But the thing that we want to tell you, Trill, one of the pilots, when they're launching their Jaeger into space, because they put boosters on the Jaegers, or launching them not into space but into the atmosphere, all of a sudden he starts playing music, and he plays the Troll Ol Ol guy from YouTube,
like video playing. And
so out of place. And like, he's like, this gets me focused or calms me down.
Get their fingers right on the pulse of contemporary internet society.
It was a fucking Russian cadet that was like no less than like maybe 14. And this is also set like 20 years in the future, 20, 30 years in the future. And he's listening to the fucking Troll-o-lo-lo-lo guy on a hologram. Jeff looked at each other immediately. We're like, what the fuck just happened?
I would have stood up and clapped if it was Chocolate Rain, though.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, that would be an improvement. Man, I wish it was. So what I'm hearing from you guys is that, Jeff, you wish there was more story. He gave it a 50, and Ken Jack liked the mindless robot fighting at the end, so he gave it a 70. So it sounds like the story kind of dissolved a little bit and just laid way to, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, the movie.
That's my issue, though, and I guess you're close to summing it up for me, is that I'm okay. Like, I'd have been on Ken Jack's side if they didn't tease a story in the beginning. If there wasn't something interesting in the beginning that I liked, and then they just kind of abandoned it. That's my biggest issue. That was disappointing to me, because I wanted to like this movie.
Yeah, I really liked the robot fighting, and I think the reason I would like it in this and didn't like it so much maybe in the last like 20 Transformers movies is because I'm just so fatigued to fucking Transformers, and this is just at least a little bit different. At least it's robot fighting an organic creature instead of.
Well, also I agree with you. The robot fighting, I've seen the first Pacific Rim, the non-Uprising version, and the fight scenes were awesome in that one. They're easy to follow along with, and they're epic, and they're grand, and they're really cool. Unlike Transformers, where it's just a lot of metallic noises and sparks. So I get you there. I get you.
You're making an all spark joke there, or was that serious?
No, I don't make jokes. Everything is serious as fuck.
Well, actually, one more thing. This is not related to the movie in terms of the story or what happens, but in terms of the theater. So obviously somebody's fucking with us at this point, because I now, every time I go into a movie, something happens around me that just really raises my anxiety levels through the roof, but also concerns me. This is really a see something, say something situation, at least in Pacific Rim. Death of Stalin was different. That was just really weird old people. But Pacific Rim Uprising, we sit down, or we go to sit down, and there's a guy in our seat, and he has about 8 jackets next to him. So that was interesting to begin with. But he also had my least favorite thing in New York. A ball cap, actually like a 100-year-old person, but a baseball hat with no logo on it. Like a generic one-color baseball hat. Like, you can't do that. Like, that's what fucking Bucky Barnes wears in Civil War to hide out because they're hunting him because he's a terrorist. And so this guy has this black hat on, no logo. Like, oh,
Tony Romo was actually in front of us. That's who it was this whole time. Oh, sorry. Yeah, we'll bleep out his name.
Isn't that what John Hamm does? Isn't John Hamm a big fan of the no logo ball cap?
Oh, he might be. I can picture that now.
Yeah.
But so we had the commercials before the movie, and he was doing some weird, like, head shaking, like, yes, head shaking, no. And remember, he's not with anybody. So I was like, that's a little strange. But, you know, like, I react to trailers and commercials as well. It is what it is. And then he starts getting really fucking weird. He starts flipping off the screen during some of the trailers.
That's
and
weird.
That's where I started to get really concerned. Then I turned to Ken Jack, I'm like, dude, we have to move. I can't do this. I really can't do this. So we're looking around. And nowadays with the reserve seats, people still don't know how to show up on time. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it a minute. There's an empty seat I might go over to. And then I thought he was starting to flip off people that were walking by him. Like, okay, it's enough. I got up right as the movie was starting and I went over to sit down in a different seat. Kendrick, I haven't told you this yet. What I didn't know is I didn't know you weren't going to follow me. So I sat down in my seat and I look over and there's Kendrick sipping on his soda, just chilling out behind this weird guy. And so Kendrick and I were at the same movie and didn't sit next to each other the entire time.
You left during the Deadpool trailer. I wasn't going anywhere.
I was so bugged out by that guy. And then there was also that kid that got up and down the entire movie, too.
Oh, yeah. What was with that? And he also started dancing during the Deadpool commercial. Which was really
only in New York. Only in New York. Yeah, you guys can just avoid that by not seeing the movie. Like Galaxy Brain over here, co-host of a movie podcast, doesn't see a movie.
With certain movies.
It's a good excuse. Yeah. You didn't see Flatliners. That's Pacific Rim. 52 from me, 70 from Ken Jack, and the listeners. Their scores are in. A bunch of you guys saw it. Bunch of you guys and gals saw it. There's big time movie boys and big time movie girls. Gave it a 53 out of 100. So right around where I was. And that was pretty consistent too. There was, I think the highest one was like a 63. So there was a very consistent score there. So 53 out of 100 from the listeners. Time for Death of Stalin. I gotta
say real quick, Jeff. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get my wife inside the movie van.
So you want to have your wife with you?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get it on the podcast real quick.
Sure.
It's been on the three text bubbles for about 4 minutes. So I'm guessing it's a no. But if she does come on, this will be a good podcast moment. Don't cut this part because if she doesn't come on, I just want people to know. I tried.
What are you gonna ask her?
I don't know. We'll just interview her. She says no. I don't think so. Okay, never mind. She will not be coming on the podcast.
Maybe one day. You did make her watch Emoji Movie, the first podcast episode we ever did. So I still want to hear her thoughts on that.
We see a lot of these movies together. She just will not come on the podcast. She's got a beautiful voice. I don't know why. You know. Whatever. All right, Death of Stalin. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Good attempt, though. Death of Stalin. So if you skipped the Pacific Rim spoilers, we're just going to spoil this movie right off the bat. So if you don't want to have this movie spoiled, though it is technically history, I guess.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Now, we're going to do this in a way where we don't spoil it. We'll just talk about what we liked, because we both really like this movie. Ken Jack, what did you give Death of Stalin?
Give Death of Stalin a 94. I fucking love this movie.
Ooh, okay. Wow. Well, I'm right there with you. So when I say, ooh, okay, it's because we're close. I gave it a 92 out of 100. This is a great movie, and it's a movie that I liked more and more the more I thought about it and like really realized how well put together it was. And it's not that I disliked it at first, but we had just seen Pacific Rim. I forgot to mention, we saw these movies back to back. And the theater experience was weird, and I kind of marinated on it. I'm like, God, I really like that movie. We'll get into the theater experience for this one in a moment because it was very funny. It was completely different than the first one, but it was a very funny movie theater moment. But what's also very funny is this movie. This is a hilarious movie. It is by Armando Iannucci, the same person who created Veep and some other stuff, not on American television, which some people may recognize. But if you know Veep and you like Veep, you will like this movie. Very similar style, which is like all of the things he does, Iannucci does. It's just hilarious. Very fastly paced. It's a quick movie. The comedy hits quick. The gags are great. The script is fantastic. We talked about how much we dislike some recent comedies, and I've mentioned before, me personally, I hate improv in a lot of comedies. Maybe there was some improv in this movie, but I also thought the script was fantastic. Like, everything just hit perfectly. Again, the pacing was great. There was no dull moments in this movie whatsoever. They put the story together perfectly, and they did it on, you know, what's mostly a true story. Obviously, they took liberties with some things. It was a comedy, but they took a very grim part of history and a very, you know, awful thing that happened. There's a lot of executions in this movie. They obviously talk about Stalin for the majority of the movie. They take something that's very negative and they put a twist on it. Like, that's kind of hard to explain, but it's such a unique thing that they do with this movie. And it's again, it's hilarious. The acting is great in it. Jeffrey Tambor, Steve Buscemi, everyone in this movie does a great job. This is one of the better comedies of the 2010 to 2018 span that we talked about a few weeks ago. This is right up there with, this might be in my top five, I guess, based on my rating. I think it would be, it might be just below top five, but this is an awesome movie. This was such a pleasant surprise, which our listeners were like, you got to see this movie this week. Can you review this movie? And the listeners who talked about this movie loved it and told us to go see it. And I'm glad they did, because this was, again, fantastic comedy.
Yeah, man. There's so much of Veep in it. It's great. It's just sort of like Veep, except it's maybe like 50% darker. Not that Veep is dark at all, but it reminded me almost like if you combine Veep and like In Bruges, and just like, then you get Death of Stalin. It's about a very dark subject matter, but the pacing is really, really well done. And the comedy is hilarious. And the performances in it, I thought, were so good. Some actors won't go named in this particular casting role, but Simon Russell Beale, who played Beria, was really, really good. He fucking killed it. The fat guy with the glasses, so fucking funny. And Jason,
probably the best role.
Yeah, and Jason Isaacs was like, when he came in, maybe in the third act of the movie, right? He fucking killed it. He was so damn funny. Every word he said, I was fucking crying laughing. And also Rupert Friend, who I knew from Quinn in Homeland, was really good. He played Stalin's son, Vasily, who was like a drunk idiot. He was hilarious. That like struggle scene in the execution chamber was so fucking funny. I think anyone who likes satire movies, and specifically political satire movies, will like this movie. But I think there's also definitely a lot of people who like general comedy that just won't like it because they won't really get the style. But I think almost anyone should like this. It was fucking so good.
Yeah, it's not for everybody, I think, for sure. Like, there are some people who will not like this movie because of just what it is. Even people who like Veep, maybe, because it is different than Veep. It's the same style as Veep, you know, just like. And when I say fast-paced movie-wise, it's also fast-paced in terms of what happens in the movie. They're all walking a lot. They walk really quickly. They move quickly from scene to scene. So it's very similar to that respect with Veep. And it's very quick-hitting. It's a great movie. It was an absolute blast. Again, I gave it a 92. Kendrick gave it a 94. I think the movie, a word that I want to put with this one is symmetry. It begins and ends very similarly. Like, it both begins and ends kind of the same way. And I just love that. It's tied in perfectly. The narrative's great. The story's great. The writing, like I said, is fantastic. This was a pleasant surprise. And nothing like seeing a movie in February that you know is going to stick the entire year. That is going to be, from beginning to end, a movie that you have in your top 15 or so for the year. And I really hope this movie gets nominated for something. I think at this point, it's a clear movie that should be nominated for a screenplay. It's a great screenplay. Fantastic. The listeners gave it a score a little lower than us, though. They gave it an 81.
Wow.
81 from the listeners. Yeah, there were some higher scores and a couple lower ones that dragged it down in the 70s. So an 81 from the listeners. But Death of Stalin, I think go see it if you have it in theaters by you. There's a lot of things out right now that are not nationwide. Like, we have Isle of Dogs here. Trill doesn't have Isle of Dogs by him. And then Thoroughbreds for us, which is a movie we really want to see, which has been out for a little while. That is playing barely anywhere, which is disappointing. I guess it's a box office performance because I really want to see Thoroughbreds, but it's like one showing a night. And it was at like 5 p.m. yesterday, so Kendrick and I weren't able to see it. We want to see it, and we will see it. But that's why we didn't reveal Isle of Dogs, of course, this week. So we want to make sure more people see it. But I think a lot of you saw Death of Stalin, it looks like, and for the most part, you guys liked it. So we enjoyed it. Very funny movie. Again, I gave it a 92 out of 100. Kendrick gave it a 94 out of 100. And if you like Veep, I think you should like this movie. It's different. It's dark, like Kendrick said, but I think you should like this movie. Armando Iannucci does a fantastic job with this. It's a must-see.
Yeah. I'm throwing the must-lead or must-watch sticker on that as well.
Yeah, it's so officially, guys, buttered.
I got to give you an update. Sorry, you probably heard during the podcast I opened my car door to get some air in here. So it is cooler in here, but they're refinishing my floors. So there are fumes coming from the house into the car. So just awful situation I'm dealing with right now. I apologize, but at least the temperature is comfortable.
Have an on-air death.
That's good.
And that's my take on Death of Stalin. Actually, I will not probably see Pacific Rim Uprising, but I will make a point to see this movie because I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, I know you will like it, no doubt. You will probably have it in the 90s as well. You will definitely like this movie. So that's Death of Stalin, and that's Pacific Rim Uprising. Reminder, Kenjack gave Pacific Rim Uprising a 70. I gave it a 52. Listeners gave it a 53. So fairly similar scores there. Death of Stalin a little off, but typically I think the listener scores, you guys are a little harder graders than us sometimes, which is, I respect. I like that. Okay, Kenjack, you and I now have to play a little game with Trill Bollins. The Court of Trill is now in session. Cue the music.
Okay, welcome to the Court of Trill Bollins. Please rise for the Honorable Trill Bollins. Thank you. Kenjack, you're looking mighty buff today, I must say. Today we have two movies on our docket. The first movie is... Fuck. I forgot. I know what the first movie is. No, the first movie is Sherlock Gnomes. I'm sorry, I'm a really good lawyer / judge is what I'm supposed to be. And the second movie is Game Over, Man. I will flip a coin to determine who is prosecution and who is defense, starting with Jeff on the first movie. If it is heads, you are defense, and if it is tails, you are prosecution. I will flip my legal coin now. Jeff, you are defense. It is heads.
Yes.
For Sherlock Gnomes. Kenjack, you are prosecution. Please keep in mind to treat me with the utmost respect, as I did get a 154 on my LSAT score back in 2007 when I took the test. And I will make my decision at the end of each individual case. Okay, I will now call the defense for Sherlock Gnomes to the stand. Jeff D. Loeb, please approach the bench.
Why do you approach?
Thank you.
Well, look, okay, first off, contempt. Kenjack is in contempt of court.
Prosecution always first. Didn't you?
You are in contempt. You are penalized 5 legal points. Please, sheriff, please silence this man. Mr. Lowe, please.
You ass.
This is my courtroom. This is my courtroom. Dumb fuck.
Sorry. I have to be serious. Okay. Honorable Trill Bollins, Sherlock Thank Gnomes
we can
is
say
a delight.
Again.
Yeah, Honorable Trill Bollins.
Oh, I like that. I laid on. You're much more respectful than that Kenjack guy.
Thank you. Do you have pants on over those robes? Or
bailiff?
Sir, unlike prosecution, this movie is a delightful, delightful experience. First off, while I don't want to come off as pandering to you and your brand, but Michael Caine is in this movie. And Michael Caine is fantastic. He has a very soft, wonderful voice, soothing British accent. So Michael Caine is fantastic. Now, is this a sequel? Yes. Is it by DreamWorks and it's not Shrek? Yes, I understand that. But this is a twist on a classic, Sherlock Holmes. Is Johnny Depp in this movie? Yes. Look, we understand. We understand what the problems may be with this movie. But what it does great is fart humor. And fart humor is fantastic. And not just the fart humor from the trailer, but the fart humor throughout the movie. It is woven into the story so wonderfully. And it's also part of a cinematic universe that I adore. I love the Romeo and Juliet cinematic universe. It's wonderful. It's enjoyable. And this movie is truly great. So I think Sherlock Gnomes is a movie that you need to see. And I know you may be thinking, and this is my last point really, that, wow, this movie has an absolute shit score on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a 19%, 42% audience score. But you know what I say? Rotten Tomatoes is not the end-all be-all. Since when do critics determine anything? This movie has Mary J. Blige. This movie has Ozzy Osbourne. This movie has Chiwetel Ejiofor, Emily Blunt, James McAvoy. And it doesn't have James Corden.
Ooh.
So you can't go wrong with this movie.
Let the court note that the movie does not have James Corden. Thank you. All right, please continue.
I rest my case. No, I rest my case at that. You should see this movie without question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Mr. Jack, the prosecutor, please approach the bench. As the prosecution usually goes second in my courtroom.
Yes, Your Honor. I feel like I shouldn't even have to make a statement because Mr. Lowe has made my entire argument for me. But however, I will. I gave Romeo and Juliet a 10 out of 100. And I think that's maybe being even a little generous. It probably should be in the single digits. At our very core, there is no understanding of how movies like this get made at all. How the agents of actors and actresses like James McAvoy, Emily Blunt, Michael Caine, Chiwetel Ejiofor let something like this happen is beyond me. If you get handed a script where the basis of the plot is Toy Story, except it's garden gnomes, and you say yes to it, you are either Nicolas Cage's agent or you deserve to be fired. This is a trash movie with a trash franchise, and it makes no sense. Your Honor, Moriarty in this movie is a pie mascot. It makes no sense, and they make him resemble Elton John for no reason whatsoever. They don't really explain it at all, but he's facially is supposed to be Elton John, and they don't tell you why. Also, there's only two characters in this entire franchise that are named after gnome puns, and that's Romeo and Sherlock Gnomes. Everyone else has a regular-ass name. Why is that, Your Honor? That's not consistent at all with the Romeo and Juliet cinematic universe. This franchise is bad. It deserves to be erased from our memory. I want to propose that whoever directed it be put away for life. And I say that you should not watch this movie, Your Honor. I rest my case.
Thank you, Mr. Jack. The court will now come to its summary decision. I will now cite the precedent case of 2012. I can't really remember. I'm not a good judge. Of Romeo and Juliet, which the court decided... legally speaking, was dumb as fuck. I will not be seeing this movie. The court will not be seeing this movie. Mr. Jack, you have won this case. Mr. Lowe, you present a compelling argument for the delightfulness of gnome characters. However, one just does not forgive farting into a mud hole or pothole and having that all over the previews for 6 months. That is my decision. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, good. I'm a good judge. I am good. Okay. the next case is the Lights Camera State of Lights Camera podcast versus Game Over Man. Kinjak, I will now flip the legal coin. Heads, you are the defendant. Tails, you are the prosecution. Mr. Jack, you are the prosecution for I Love You Man.
Damn it. Today, oh, I love you, man.
It seems today that the legal system has shined in your favor. I forget who went first last time. I believe it was the defense. Mr. Loeb, please approach the bench again with the same respectful demeanor as the first time and argue your case for I Love You Man. All right, game over, man. Fuck, I'm drunk, and this car is very hot.
Thank you. Your Honor, Honorable Trill Ballins, And again, I respect your decision for Sherlock Gnomes, despite my huge score of 21 out of 100. I really thought you would like the movie. Game over, man.
Please let the court note that Mr. Lowe is trying to tongue my asshole. Please continue.
Sir, excuse me, Your Honor. I apologize. Game Over Man has one thing going for it more than anything else. And I know people like this. It's on Netflix. You can watch it on the toilet, taking a shit. You can watch it in bed. You can watch it on the train. You can watch it on the treadmill. You can watch it at home. You can watch it with your wife. You can watch it with your wife's boyfriend. You can watch it anywhere. It is a movie that services your time. You don't have to service its time. You don't have to sit in a creepy theater. And on top of that, if you like Workaholics, which I understand I'm taking a chance here, that you may not like it, this is Workaholics just wrapped up in an action comedy. Very similar humor. Is it stretched out over the course of an hour and a half? Yeah, maybe it is. But the laughs in this movie are huge. When this movie works, it works well. You laugh out loud. You shed a tear, maybe. The chemistry is great between the three. As you know, if you watch their show, Workaholics, Adam Devine, Anders Holm, and Blake Anderson. But what I don't understand is how anyone could not want to watch a movie that is free with their Netflix subscription and can watch it anywhere. And that's the one thing I'll hammer more than anything else. It's a fun action comedy. Comedies these days aren't great. We know that. We understand that. But this one is a blast, and you can watch it anywhere. At any time, you can pause it, can download it to your smart device, watch it on a plane, and that's the best thing in the world.
Excuse me,
a movie that you can watch anywhere. Yeah.
Are you saying that if I had a Samsung Galaxy S8, I could watch this movie on my Samsung Galaxy S8 on Sprint service?
Yes, you could.
Which I must note to the court that Sprint is much cheaper and has about 98% of the reliability of Verizon.
Yes, that's correct.
Some oohs and ahs would be nice there. Please clap. Okay, please conclude. I have to poop.
That's it. I rest my case, sir. Netflix. That's the last thing you need to remember from my argument here. Netflix.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. You present a compelling case. Mr. Kinjak, the prosecutor, or I'm sorry, I did not mean to swear in court. The prosecution, please approach the bench.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Judge Ballins. Mr. Lowe makes a compelling point in that you can watch this movie on Netflix. However, there are a lot of shitty net movies on Netflix. That does not necessarily mean you should
Excuse
watch
me,
all of them.
Mr. Kinjak, did you just say shitty net movies? Can you expand a little bit on these net movies for the court's understanding?
There's one website called Pornhub.net, and then from there you can go to speak out from there.
Okay. We are clarified. Please let the court record this and the court record.
I object. I object. He wanted to bleep out something, and it's a courtroom hearing. I mean, what? You can't bleep it out.
It's off the record. The stenographer didn't hear it.
Objection. Objection.
You can't object. You're the judge.
I'm ruling the objection. Actually, because you're pissing me off, objection sustained. We will not bleep out that for the court. We will continue to have that in the records. Please continue with your prosecutorial forthgoings.
Okay. So, in the speaking term of Pornhub.net, this movie was in essence basically a porno. You see, not one, but two completely exposed penises throughout, one of which is quite large and uncircumcised. It was scary.
Mr. Kinjak. It appears you are making the defendant's case for me.
You also see a billionaire man eating a fat man's ass for no less than 10 seconds in a full exposed sequence. And he talks about how it tastes really good and it's gross.
Okay. I've heard enough of this court today. I rule in the favor of the defense of this movie under the statute of 2007, the State versus Bright, where Bright wasn't that good, but still was on Netflix, and I wanted to see it anyway. Mr. Jack, the scenes that you are describing fall under the legal statute of sounding fucking awesome. So
I respect your judgment, Your Honor.
Yeah, thank you. I will see this movie just based on what you have described to me today. All right, the court, Mr. Kinjak, are there any other statements you'd like to make just for the record of the court?
There's references to Shaggy multiple times.
Can you clarify for the court, is it the reggae hip-hop artist Shaggy or Scooby-Doo Shaggy?
the hip-hop artist, Your Honor.
Perhaps I rushed into judgment.
I believe you view that as a positive, though. Ken Jack.
I did? No, we were looking up earlier, Your Honor. I want to make a little bit of an attack on the judge here in this case. Shaggy is actually a former U.S. Marine, so you're disrespecting the group here and hating Shaggy. So I rule this to be a star court and that this is a mistrial and that we will revisit this at another
time. Excuse me, I object. I will not reveal how I saw the notes of the prosecution, but the prosecution's notes clearly state that Shaggy is under the prose section of this movie.
Hearsay. Okay.
Order in the court. I use the entry into the 2001 case Shaggy versus his girlfriend, in which he claimed it wasn't me, to completely absolve Shaggy of any bad responsibility towards this movie. All right, thank you. This was a very good segment that we will monitor the Reddit to see how it performs and whether or not we bring it back. Court is now closed.
Okay. Wow, that was great. So scores for Sherlock Gnomes, 10 from Ken Jack, 21 from me. The listener score for Sherlock Gnomes. Nobody saw this movie because there's no fucking listener score. And then Game Over Man, I gave it a 49. Ken Jack, what'd you give Game Over Man?
I gave it a 23.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. And then our listeners gave Game Over Man a 50 right on the dot. Look, there's nothing to say about Sherlock Gnomes. There really isn't. Game Over Man, there's a lot of dicks, as Ken Jack says. I mean, a lot of full frontal male nudity, which, I mean, whatever, it's fine. It's just, it's a lot. So, I mean, I wouldn't watch this with your grandparents or your parents. I will say that. If you like Workaholics, you're going to like a lot of the jokes this movie, but it feels like Workaholics, like the same amount of jokes in one episode of Workaholics stretched over the course of an hour and a half. There are some very funny parts of this movie. Like, there are some parts that I laughed out loud. The Shaggy part is pretty good. It's Utkarsh Ambedkar. I'm saying his name wrong. The lead, I guess, one of the protagonists, he plays this character who's like an Instagram star. And he's really funny. There's a lot of scenes with him that I think are probably the best scenes from the movie. He plays a guy named Bay Awadi, who is, like, again, he's like an Instagram millionaire, billionaire. He's great. The Workaholics cast is great, but unfortunately, I think there's just too many dull moments with jokes that just don't land, unfortunately. But, I mean, otherwise, it's a Netflix movie, so it doesn't bother me that much. It really doesn't.
It was just boring. It was just not that. It was an extension of Workaholics, more or less. It didn't feel like it was anything separate from Workaholics. It was just, I don't know, really boring. Also, Blake Anderson does a campy impersonation of a gay man, and it was very uncomfortable to listen to.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I do remember that, yeah. Okay, so Game Over Man, you can see that on Netflix. Romeo and Juliet, you guys haven't seen it yet. I assume you're not going to. So those are the four movies we talked about this week. One movie next week, Ready Player One. Though maybe we'll dip into like Flower or Thoroughbreds if we finally get a chance to go see that. All right, Trill, you're off the hook. It's time to get back into the zone here for Movie Battles 4, excuse me. Is the car okay? Are you doing okay in the car?
The temperature's fine now because I opened up the door of the car, but now the fumes from my house are starting to come into it. And they told me it's actually not too bad in terms of toxicity, but we'll see about that.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to reload, make sure Trill has enough nutrients and water and is hydrated. And then Movie Battles 4. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Inside the Actors Studio. I am James Lipton, your host. In the grand world of cinema, many films stand out as the greatest of all time. Citizen Kane, The Godfather, and of course, Pacific Rim. Today, we'll be interviewing the star of the hit movie Pacific Rim Uprising, John Boyega. Yes, yes, well, Mr. Boyega declined our interview request, so instead, we will be interviewing his Jaeger, Gypsy Danger.
Thank you so much for having me, James.
Ha ha ha, you are a delight, my friend. In 2013, I went to see a film. Like many in the theater, I was expecting a certain type of film because of the title. I had just splashed my first dollop of Jergens on my hand when I realized my error. Enter you. Tell me, what drove you to start acting?
Well, you know, I was just like every other average robot in high school. I graduated and immediately went to work doing erotic dances for Elon Musk. And then I had a really defining change in my life that made me want to switch career paths.
Yes, yes. Tell us more.
Well, I came home early from work one night and thought I would surprise my wife. And when I opened the door, I saw her, I saw her and Optimus Prime in bed together. And the one thing they don't tell you about Autobots is how they yell, "Autobots roll out," every time they release.
Ha ha ha, what a delight you are. Tell me, Gypsy, when you consider your performance in Pacific Rim, your performance in Pacific Rim Uprising, and the discovery of the wheel, which do you think was more important?
I don't know, probably the wheel?
So humble! One of the many things I admire about you, my friend, including your gigantic metallic phallus.
What are you talking about? When have you seen
When one thinks of the most prolific actors of all time, people like Marlon Brando, Cary Grant, and Mark Wahlberg come to mind. Tell me, what was it like to work with Marky Mark?
I think you're thinking of someone else.
And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like God to say when you arrive?
Well, I'm a robot, so I can basically live forever.
How insightful! Well, that's all the time we have, and I look forward to seeing your performance in the Bumblebee movie.
Wait, no, I'm not in Transformers. Wait, you didn't even let me plug the movie, you son of a bitch.
All right, welcome back. Movie Battles 4. Actually, before Movie Battles, let me touch on something real quick that we've done that we really enjoy and we hope you enjoy. We did a Pixar-Disney movie bracket because there were some Disney and Pixar movie brackets out there that were truly trash. They were awful. Like, some of them didn't make any sense. One forgot Aladdin. Another one was Disney on one side, Pixar on the other, which I just feel like you can't do. You got to mix the seating. So what we did was we took your votes from the Disney rankings we did with Coley back in December, I believe, and we used that. Or actually, I think it was November. Regardless, we used that to seed this bracket. There was a first round vote. We're on to the second round. You can vote. There's a link in the description for the podcast. The number one seeds got off pretty fine. Incredibles, Lion King, Toy Story, Toy Story 3 all had over 90%. The Cars movies got obliterated. Cars 3 had 0.7% of the vote against Incredibles. And then Cars, which, look, I don't want to call it the listeners here, but a lot of listeners are like, Cars was totally underseeded at a 12 seed. Cars got 11.4% of the vote, one of the worst performances in the bracket. Only two upsets. Pocahontas beat 7-seeded Pinocchio, and 10-seeded Coco beat 7-seeded Jungle Book. Also, there was a 9 over an 8. Fantasia won, so suck it, Ken Jack. Mickey Mouse movie. Moved on to the second round. So second round voting is open, but I want to hear quickly what you guys have as your final four. My final four was Toy Story in the Splash Mountain region. In the Thunder Mountain region, I had Up, Space Mountain region, Lion King, and then Matterhorn region, Toy Story 3. So all, I mean, chalk for the most part. But Trill, what's your final four from the Disney Pixar bracket?
Sure. So I had Toy Story in the Splash Mountain region. I thought this was a weak region to go up against Toy Story in. Beauty and the Beast was really the only competition, but I picked Toy Story. The Matterhorn region was a little bit tougher for me because Toy Story 3 is my favorite, but there's no way I can put Toy Story 3 over Aladdin. So I had Aladdin there. So we have Toy Story, Aladdin, coming out of that side, the left side. And Thunder Mountain, the Incredibles just ran all the way with it. No competition. And then in Space Mountain, same thing with Lion King. I didn't think there was much competition for Lion King in this bracket or this region as well. So Lion King, Incredibles, Aladdin, and Toy Story.
Yeah, actually, Finding Nemo was the 2 seed in the Space Mountain region, and it was the weakest 2 seed performance out of any of the 2 seeds. So, all right, Ken Jack, what's your final four?
From Splash Mountain, I have Hercules because I couldn't justify putting 2 different Toy Stories in the top in the final four. From Matterhorn, I have Toy Story 3. The Matterhorn region I thought was sort of extremely top heavy between Aladdin and Toy Story 3. Everything below it I wasn't huge on. Thunder Mountain region, I got The Incredibles, like Trill was saying, just completely ran away with it. And from the Space Mountain region, Lion King. You can't vote for anything else.
Yeah, I think Lion King's probably going to win this vote. Second round of voting is open. It's very close. A lot of the matchups are very close. Even a couple of the 1 seeds have a close one. It's been fun. A lot of the replies are really cool. We appreciate this. We're going to do more brackets in the future. You know, we'd like to have a platform to do these on at some point that'll be easier. But for now, we'll run them through Twitter. And what we'll do is we'll do a vote for seeding. We got to think about what we want to do next. We might do most anticipated movie of 2018 for the rest of the year because Fandango put one out and it was not great. Please sponsor the pod. We'll help you make better brackets. But maybe that's what we'll do. When we see a bad bracket, we'll just make a better one. That's what inspired this, and it's been cool. So you can go check it out in the description and vote for second round matchups. Movie battles. You guys voted for these. Time to look at some movie battles. First movie battle. We'll decide, the three of us, and then we'll say who our listeners picked. Which 2017 Beast movie do you prefer? Beauty and the Beast or The Shape of Water? Trill Bollins, you're up first.
Beauty and the Beast by far. I like Shape of Water, but in terms of just the Beast movie and the Beast's involvement, I got to go with Beauty and the Beast. I didn't love the actual water creature itself in Shape of Water. I liked everything else. I mean, I liked it, but not as much as the Beast.
I'm going with Beauty and the Beast as well. Absolute cinematic experience. Amazing. Great job, Dan Stevens. I love you. Come on the pod.
Just a reminder that when Ken Jack came over to pregame one night before going out, he put on the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack. So I'm not surprised by that pick. I'm going Shape of Water. Just prefer it. Unnecessary movie, Beauty and the Beast. I enjoyed it. It was unnecessary.
Ooh, that's a hot take.
Hot take.
Yeah. That's a hot take.
Which I guess The Lion King is too, but I know I'm going to like The Lion King. Listeners, 51.6%, very close vote, picked Shape of Water. Well, split there. We're tied. Oh, no decision, I guess. But you know what? Now the listeners get the decision. They always have the tie break there. Next up.
Yeah, I think it was technically the better movie. But you know what? I like the Beast. He's a charming grump.
He is. Yeah. It's very true. He's a bit of a kidnapper, but you know.
Also, it's hard for me to consider something that's not a mammal to be a beast.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
It has a dick. I don't know how that works.
Reptiles have dicks, dude.
What's the qualifier to be a mammal? Like breathe? No, that's not it. What is it?
Live birth?
Live birth? Well, does the Shape of Water beast creature female species give live birth or eggs? I feel like they're an egg species.
I feel like maybe we could tweet at GDT and find out.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him. Okay. That's been science talk. Next up, who will win more Oscars in their career? Jennifer Lawrence, who has one, or Saoirse Ronan, who does not have one yet, so she's kind of a leg down here. Kendrick, you go first. Who's going to have more career Oscars, Jennifer Lawrence or Saoirse Ronan?
I think Saoirse Ronan. I think she's a very, might say, multifaceted actress. Not to say that Jennifer Lawrence isn't. I find her much more convincing, I would say. So I'm going Saoirse Ronan.
So Jennifer Lawrence already has... No, wait. She just has one Oscar, right, for Silver Linings. She was just nominated for Winner's Bone.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Because
She was nominated for other, by the way. But
she was nominated for Joy and American Hustle. But being up one, I mean, that's like... It's like soccer, I feel like, you know? It's like... That's a big lead already. However, Saoirse Ronan, I don't think we've seen the full capability of her acting prowess yet. So I'm going to go with Saoirse Ronan as well, but it wouldn't shock me if Jennifer Lawrence I don't want to say turn things around, because she really, I mean, she's been quite enjoyable, but she hadn't been in roles that have been up to like Oscar winner standards, even though she's been nominated. And I feel like Saoirse Ronan would get mixed up with like more of the Oscar Beatty type movies if Jennifer Lawrence is like going for more like Red Sparrow type deals.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Saoirse Ronan here. I think that Jennifer Lawrence just isn't going to go for the Oscar roles. You know, I think we talked about this plenty. She takes the risks now, which maybe that will result in an Oscar. And not to say that Saoirse Ronan's settling for Oscar roles, but I think that she's a little younger than Jennifer Lawrence. I think she's going to land some roles that are going to get her Oscar nomination. She's already got two. I think her last two movies have that, Lady Bird and Brooklyn. But I think she's destined for at least one, maybe another one. I think Jennifer Lawrence is going to be pretty picky about what she does from here on out. So I'm not sure it's going to always result in an Oscar nod. And she has a lot of nominations so far, so I think it's pretty close. But I'm going Saoirse Ronan. The listeners are going Saoirse Ronan as well. So Saoirse Ronan, the pick there. Movie battle number three. Start getting a little... The first two were pretty serious. They're going to start getting a little not very serious after this one. But this one's serious. Which Quentin Tarantino movie do you prefer? Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs? Trebons, you got the first pick.
Pulp Fiction. I like Reservoir Dogs, but Pulp Fiction is Quentin Tarantino's... I think you could argue that's his best work and his most defining work. And it is... I mean, I love that movie through and through.
Yeah, I'm with Joel on this. Also, Pulp Fiction. I think it is probably, at least in my opinion, maybe my favorite movie he's done other than, I don't know, Django? Like, maybe? So, I'm definitely going Pulp Fiction over Reservoir Dogs. Not to say that Reservoir Dogs isn't good. It's just, it's a tougher movie to follow along, I think.
Yeah, this is going to be a clean sweep here. I got to go Pulp Fiction. Now, obviously, I gave it away to listeners. Go with the two. 72.1% of the listeners say Pulp Fiction. By the way, 61.4% said Saoirse Ronan. But I got to go Pulp Fiction as well. I it's my second or third favorite behind definitely Inglourious Basterds. But yeah, I like Pulp Fiction, and here it is. We got to say iconic once an episode at least. It is an iconic movie. And there's so many scenes in that will kind of live on forever. Performances are great. I got to go Pulp Fiction, but not to say I don't love Reservoir Dogs. So I obviously like that movie a lot. But Kenji, I think your point is pretty great in terms of following that movie. But we all agree, in terms of Quentin Tarantino movies, picking Pulp Fiction. Next up, here's an interesting question. Let's see how you interpret this one. Which one do you prefer, Infinity Stones or Oliver Stone? Ken Jack, you're up first.
Infinity Stones, man. They run the galaxy or universe, whatever. Tear a hole in the universe. Don't know what Oliver Stone can tear a hole in, but screw you, Oliver Stone. No, that's not true. I just like Infinity Stones a lot.
Infinity Stones. What about you, Trill?
Yeah, let me go through Oliver Stone's work, at least the notable work, in terms of directing. Platoon, Wall Street.
Platoon?
Platoon. From Indiana, man. I can't help it. I just pronounce things weird. Natural Born Killers, so on. Yeah, but Infinity Stones can manipulate time, and I don't think Oliver Stone can do that. He can make movies about JFK, but he can't reverse the course of human history. So I'm going to go with Infinity Stones.
Yeah, I got to go Infinity Stones as well. Some of the early work from Oliver Stone I happen to like. JFK, Nixon, Any Given Sunday. I mean, I'm okay with those movies. The recent stuff, World Trade Center, W, Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, not a big fan of those. So I got to go Infinity Stones here too. And maybe that's recency bias. Maybe we're just really in Infinity Stones right now. But I have to go Infinity Stones. And guess what? The listeners do too. Another clean sweep here. 75% of the listeners are going to take Infinity Stones over Oliver Stone. Next up, back to a movie versus movie question, but here's a twist. It's a movie versus movie versus movie. Which Taylor Sheridan, who wrote these movies, movie do you prefer? Wind River, Sicario, or Hell or High Water? Very tough question, because for me, I love all three of those movies. Trebon, you're up first.
I think I would rank them as Wind River, Hell or High Water, then Sicario.
Little so
Wind River, my answer.
Interesting facial expression there, Ken Jack.
I'm going, if I had to choose, Sicario, Wind River, and then Hell or High Water. I think Sicario was so gritty, and I think the casting was so well done. I loved every performance in it. I didn't necessarily love every performance in either Wind River or Hell or High Water.
So we're split on this. Wind River wins, but not because I voted for it and pushed it over the edge. The listeners voted 35.1%. Actually, well, I read that completely wrong. Sicario wins.
Whoop.
39.6% picked Sicario. Trill's alone on Wind River. I'm alone on Hell or High Water. I love Hell or High Water. It was at one point my favorite year of 2017. Eventually, La La Land did jump over it. But Hell or High Water has one of the best third act twists in any movie I've ever seen. It is awesome. If you haven't seen it, I won't spoil it. But Hell or High Water is, man, that is one of my favorite movies just from the last 5 or 10 years or so. It's way up there. It's probably top 20 for me from since I've been doing this in 2006. Ben Foster and Chris Pine work awesome together. One of the better Jeff Bridges roles in quite some time. He's great. Fits perfectly. Just a gritty West Texas movie. It's awesome. All these movies are great. I love all three of these movies. Taylor Sheridan is on a roll much like Damien Chazelle. They got to do a movie together. That's what I think. That would be and put Ryan Coogler in there as well somehow. Find a mix between the three of them because they've just been so great the last few years. All these movies they've done here with their careers have been outstanding. So a split there. Listeners, 39% pick Sicario along with Ken Jack. Trill Ballins picks Wind River. And I pick Hell or High Water. But shout out to Taylor Sheridan because they're all great. He should have been nominated for more with Wind River. Wind River was a huge snub at the Oscars. Very unfortunate. Moving on. Next up, which Donald do you prefer? McDonald's or Donald Sutherland? Ken Jack, you're up first.
I like Donald Sutherland a lot, but I'm going McDonald's. Haven't even had it in a very long time, but it's such a staple. Donald Sutherland's been in and out throughout his career, so McDonald's has always been there.
Donald Sutherland is not there for me when I'm drunk at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Does Donald Sutherland give you stomach pains and diarrhea, though?
It's worth it. It's worth it, dude.
Absurd stand for McDonald's.
Yeah. You know where I was going on this question. I love McDonald's. I think I love everything on their menu except the Filet-O-Fish. Hey, did you guys hear about the ice cream machine at McDonald's?
Oh fuck yeah.
It's always broken.
Yeah, I'm going McDonald's too because Donald Sutherland can't get me a Shamrock Shake here in March, which I haven't had unfortunately. Shout out to Weight Watchers and Oprah, but I would like a Shamrock Shake. Sounds very good right now. Tell him to mix a little chocolate in there. Donald Sutherland can't supply that. I'm surprised you didn't pick Donald Sutherland though because he is in that movie that's the same storyline as All the Money in the World. He's in the TV show with Brendan Fraser.
Trust.
Shout out to Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, but if you were to say McDonald's or Brendan Fraser, I'd probably still say McDonald's.
Yeah.
But it'd be a closer race.
Ooh, that's surprising from you.
Well, I love McDonald's. I love Brendan Fraser, but McDonald's has always been there for me. You know what I like doing? I like the cheeseburgers. I think they took it off the menu, but the number two used to be the two cheeseburgers. I think they moved it to the value menu. I like pouring out like a big glob of ketchup and just dipping my cheeseburger straight into the ketchup.
That's what I usually do, actually. It's so fucking gross and fat. Love it. Dude, there's a McDonald's 2 blocks away from my apartment. I'm about to go.
Oh, no. Sorry we made you do that. The listeners pick McDonald's as well. The vote was 58.6%. A lot of Donald Sutherland love there, though. A lot of McDonald's haters, maybe. But yeah, I'll go McDonald's. Donald Sutherland, though, playing J. Paul Getty in Trust on FX, which is the same story as All the Money in the World. Number 7, back to a movie.
Well, there's my garage door going up.
Did you hit it by accident?
No. My wife is letting our dogs out, and she still refuses to come on the podcast.
Okay. So the next question is, which spoof movie do you prefer? Scary Movie or Not Another Teen Movie? I think Trill. We'll say you're up, Trill.
Like, is it just the movie or do the franchise count?
No. Just the movie because the franchise...
Okay, Scary Movie 2 is my favorite Scary Movie. But if it's just Scary Movie 1 versus Not Another Teen Movie, I like Not Another Teen Movie.
So you're going Not Another Teen Movie?
Yes, sir. Wow. I am too. Love Chris Evans. I think Jamie Presley has been severely underserved in not necessarily cinema, but she's had some TV roles where she's been pretty good.
I was disappointed that I left Not Another Teen Movie off my list when we did the comedies last week from 2000 to 2009. I mean, it didn't make it, but it was just off at number 11. Not Another Teen Movie is one of the better spoof movies ever made. It is very funny. So many great moments, a lot with Chris Evans and the antagonist in that movie. I forget his name, the blonde guy, but it's a hilarious movie. There Goes My Hero. That scene is awesome. Oh, football so scene. It hits everything perfectly, and it couldn't be replicated. Just how Scary Movie really couldn't be replicated as well, except they did. Scary Movie 2 is pretty great. 3 is okay, and then it really drops off after that. We are very against the listeners here. The listeners voted 57.4% Scary Movie. We have not another teen movie. Unfortunately, listeners, you guys don't break any ties here. You lose. We win this one. Last up, the David question. Which David do you prefer? Kenjack, you're up first. David Schwimmer or David Spade?
This is a really tough one for me. I don't like David Schwimmer, but I also really don't like David Spade. So it really came down to their like entire filmography, including TV. And I got to go David Spade. David Schwimmer's really been nothing except for what? Friends, and then he was the asshole lieutenant in Band of Brothers, and then like Robert Kardashian. So
you lose. Yeah, don't just say Robert. Don't hate on Robert Kardashian. Juice.
Yeah. Oh, Juice, what are you doing, Juice? So fuck you.
Juice.
David.
We were on a break. Classic David Schwimmer line we all know and love.
He's also, don't forget, he's in the producers in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, I'm still going David Spade.
I'm also going David Spade. And I like both of them, but I really like David Spade. David Spade was hilarious on Saturday Night Live. And I know we're talking movies, but I feel like that got him into two really good Chris Farley movies and Tommy Boy and Black Sheep.
No Joe Dirt love?
I mean, I like Joe Dirt, but I really love David Spade and Tommy Boy, and I really love him in Black Sheep. And I'll die on that hill.
My pick is different. I lose because you guys win 3-1. I'm going David Schwimmer because of, again, it's not movies, it's TV. I just love the American Crime Story, the OJ thing. People vs. OJ was fantastic. Even the parts where it was awful, it was still great. That was some of the best TV viewing that summer when that came out.
Dude, David Spade on Just Shoot Me, though. You guys are probably too young for Just Shoot Me.
Yeah, no, I watched the mayor? Just Shoot Me.
Not the mayor. He was like a mayor's aide or something.
Fuck. No, they worked at like a magazine company, and I think he was like the aide to the publisher or something like that. It was a very David Spade-like character.
I like him in Rules of Engagement. That show was not very good, but he was pretty funny in it.
I also watched the show Spin City. You remember that one?
That's real. Fuck. That's
what he was thinking. That's what he was talking about. He wasn't David Spade. Was he on Spin City? Did he replace Michael J. Fox? Oh, yeah, I like Spin City.
I just like Let's not go without talking about a movie, though. I mean, his best role to me is Tommy Boy.
Yeah. Easy.
Can't forget that. Rest in peace, Chris Farley. Alrighty. Movie battles. We settled some scores here. We'll tweet these out. We'll do this again. We do about once a month, once every 2 months. We'll see. It could live on. It could die. You never know with our segments here. Just like the Court of Trill.
Yeah. We'll see what the reaction is. And if people don't like it, then we knew it was a bad segment going into it.
if
you put some music over that and put a little gasps in there for the jury. Might be cooking.
Okay. I do always do like when you hype up the editing I'm going to do that I haven't done yet.
Don't do that. Don't go play Fortnite.
There will be music though. We will put a song in there. It's already in there if you're listening right now. You already heard it. All right. That's it. That's it for this week. Please go see Ready Player One. Any final thoughts actually, guys, before we go? Trill, you're alive. You made it through the show in your car. You're the second person to do this show in their car.
I kind of like it, dude. Shout out to Weekly Planet, Mr. Sunday Movies himself. I know those feels now. I don't mind it too much. The fumes are really getting to me right now.
Closing thought, go watch Death of Stalin. Great movie.
Yeah, I really wanted that. That was the biggest takeaway from the podcast tonight. If I learned anything, is that Death of Stalin is really good.
Yeah, you need to definitely see it. Trill, you had a bad week. Hope this week gets much better. Excuse me, the next week does.
Hey, you know what, man? With the love and support from you guys, I can do anything.
Except no judge jargon.
I don't know any of that. Kinjak's like the Kinjak's a TV binger, though. He knows all that shit because he was just watching The Blacklist, it's that legal show we all know and love.
It has nothing to do with the courtroom. I just watched Night Court reruns all day.
Lizzie, we are going after Blacklist Guy 471, the Judge Executioner.
Oh, man. Man, oh, man, oh, man. That's it. That's Lights, Camera, Podcast. Vote for the second round of the Disney Pixar movie bracket. Once again, follow us on Instagram, please, at Lights, Camera, Pod. And most importantly, go see Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about it next week and do a baseball movie character baseball draft, something like that. We'll figure it out. We'll have it up. You'll vote. You'll be involved. See Ready Player One. We'll talk to you next week.